Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
The season is saved, dude.
It is?
It's saved!
How did we do that?
We are going to win the Stanley Cup.
We are?
All because of one trade. We are going all the way, dude. I can feel it!
Did we trade for Mike Zigomanis?
Well, we have had the first domino to fall.
First domino.
In Sharks Land, with, of course, the fan favorite Dougie Murray being traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins for a 2013 second round pick and a conditional 2014 pick, depending on how many playoff rounds the Penguins win and whether he re-signs. At worst, it's the third round pick in 2014. So, of course, we've got to lead off with that, dude. You know, I think we've been expecting that this was very possible. His unrestricted free agency, just sort of the general deterioration of Murray's game.
Yeah.
What's your take on this trade, and what grade do you give it?
Well, in terms of the return, I give it a very high grade. I think this is one of those situations where Doug Wilson recognized that there were teams out there looking for a specific need. Clearly, the Penguins are trying to shore up for a Stanley Cup run. They're playing very well. They've had long win streaks this season. They have almost certainly the MVP in Sidney Crosby playing for them, and they're looking for some depth. They want some muscle, and Doug Wilson struck while the iron was hot, right? I mean, this is that situation. And if you told somebody that you could get 2 second-round picks for a number six defenseman, frankly, a defenseman that was on the bubble, I think a lot of people would be happy with that. And that was the reaction that we saw on the Twitter feed when we sort of were in the thick of things as the trade was being announced. And people said, I can't believe we got that kind of return. It's always a little bittersweet when you have a fan favorite like Doug Murray leave. I'm sure, you know, it's hard for the players, and it's hard for the GM, and, you know, there's business behind it, but as fans, it's a little difficult to see. I mean, this guy's been a Shark for 8 years. He was paired with Dan Boyle for quite a while. You know, he's had some memorable scraps. He's had a lot of memorable hits. So it's a little bittersweet, but you have to realize that it's probably the best move for the Sharks long term, right? I mean, is there any doubt?
No, there's no doubt about that. And I'm actually happy that it happened. I give the trade an A, because I don't think you could get anything better than this. I mean, like, Wilson played this perfectly. You're not going to get a top prospect for Douglas Murray. And the Sharks are in a position where they had, you know, a prospect defenseman in Braun or Demers, a guy who they really need to figure out for the future of this team, what they have, if anything, in either of those two guys, because Matt Irwin is clearly past both of them.
Yes. Oh, you know, yes.
Matt Irwin is ahead of them on the depth chart. And it's not close.
No, it's really not.
It's not close.
Especially after the game Demers had against Anaheim
so
last night.
These guys need to play, at least in the short term, to see what they have, because they were sort of taking turns dancing in and out of the press box, especially if Burns is going to continue his flight to freedom, I guess, as a forward. So I like the trade. I will have fond memories of Douglas Murray. I think we were getting a little sour on his presence on the team, and I didn't like feeling that way again about a player that I have enjoyed watching until for so long.
That's right. That's right. And one of the telling things about the trade actually was this quote from Doug Wilson saying that Murray, what is it here? Quote, places Douglas in a quality situation which he deserves. And if you put that in the context of the entire quote, it almost seems to indicate that the Sharks aren't exactly a quality situation anymore, which I thought was interesting. Probably just a weird turn of phrase made a person who read that quote think that. But I think given that comment and another comment I believe he made today about well, we're not going to go out and get a rental or something along those lines. We're not going to get a top six forward rental. Actually, it gives me a lot of hope for the Sharks, because at least it seems like Doug Wilson isn't drinking some Kool-Aid thinking that we're one piece away from being a Stanley Cup contender. Clearly, he's under no such illusions as we have not been for the entirety of the season.
Yeah, well, I don't know anyone around the league, even the most delusional fan in Sharks land, who thinks that Sharks are a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. When I've had people come up to me, dude, as I'm sure you've had, the same conversation, someone says, well, if the Sharks just make the playoffs as the 8 seed, look what the Kings did last year. Said, okay, what else has that ever happened before?
Right,
one.
Right.
And, you know, two, these two teams aren't even close to being similar. Like, they're not in terms of their makeup. You know, the Sharks have more skill than that Kings team did, but they don't play nearly as, you know, full throttle mm-hmm. as the Kings did. And that's what propelled them all the way to the Cup. So I was encouraged last night by what I saw mm-hmm. in terms of their reaction. And, you know, Jamie Baker on KNBR today was sort of downplaying that the team reacted or took this trade as a message. I say, bullshit. I mean, I'm sorry.
I
haven't seen them play like that in weeks.
Yeah.
Like, they jumped all over the Ducks. They moved Pavelski down to the third line. It sparked that third line.
Yeah.
Havlat and Jumbo together. It was freewheeling. I mean, they looked good, and they were still, you know, moderately responsible in their own end.
Yeah.
It was Sharks hockey that you expect to see from this team when they're playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat a good team. Granted, the Ducks are reeling a little bit right now, but still, I mean, you beat the Ducks in Anaheim and you beat them pretty soundly, 5-3, although, you know, it was closer than that at
yeah.
the end. But
I didn't like how they finished the game.
I still didn't think it was that. I mean, like, it was at that point, dude, where like when it was 3-2 and you're like, oh God,
yeah.
here we go. Mm-hmm. And then they made it 4-2. I mean, they really, yeah. they didn't stop playing hard. I felt like they gave an effort for 60 minutes last night, and I can't remember seeing that very often lately.
Yeah, certainly I think that the critical point in that game was the time period between when the Couture goal was disallowed and they scored the fourth goal.
Right.
Because when that Couture goal was disallowed and I was watching, I said, you know, at 3-2 anyway, I'm like, oh, crap, here we go. And then that goal gets disallowed and I said, okay, now the Sharks have basically every reason to say that they got hosed by this call. I'm not as maybe sure as Logan Couture about whether that puck was legally struck or not, but, you know, it doesn't really matter at this point. But, you know, at that point, they certainly would have an excuse saying, oh, we got hosed by this call, and that would have given us a 2-goal lead, and that would have changed the whole complexion of the game. Well, the Sharks went out and scored another one anyway to put themselves up 4-2. So I thought that was a really nice statement by the team, and the fact that the Ducks, you know, made it close again and it was 4-3. I guess maybe that's just more of a testament to the Ducks than the Sharks almost coughing up another one. But I mean, they did win, and, you know, Boyle got the empty netter and they won. So it certainly was a heartening win. And like you, I don't believe for a second that the team wasn't feeling a little extra hot, a little fire under them. Hey, guess what? You know, guys can get traded. These rumors aren't just all smoke and mirrors. You know, an 8-year veteran of the Sharks was shipped. You know, who else? Who's next, right?
Yeah.
That's the question.
One of the most popular players on the team, popular in the locker room, fan favorite, gone. And Jamie Baker said this too today. He said, a lot of these guys who play here, they like living here. It's not just about being on the hockey team.
He right.
says, they don't want to leave. And we've seen this, like, with Marlowe's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Hell no. I mean, as long as his contract's here, he's not going to approve a trade anywhere. Like, he likes living here. His family's here. Dan Boyle doesn't want to leave. He's on record. I don't want to leave.
Right.
He's got a family. They like living here. You know, and while Boyle could fetch you some great assets, he's another guy that you could keep, and he could be in the organization You know, I mean, this could mm-hmm. be a guy who is a shark for life, mm-hmm. you know, is, you know, he could be the next Doug Wilson. I mean, we don't know. I mean, like one of those types of guys,
right,
who just is around, a Ricci, a Marchment, like these guys are here. They're sharks for life. And they seem to want to, I'm not speaking for them, but they're on record. They don't want to go anywhere.
Well, that's an interesting point, because there was a comment on the blog and someone said, well, you know, I think you'd be doing Boyle a favor by putting him in a better position somewhere else where a team actually has a chance of winning. And sure, I'm sure that there's a better hockey situation for Dan Boyle out there. There's other teams in the NHL where he would have a greater chance to win a Stanley Cup. But, you know, my response to that is I don't presume to know what's best for a guy who has a wife and small yeah. children and has put roots down here. I mean, is it really the best, quote unquote, best thing for Boyle to uproot that family, ship him to New York? He has to find an apartment in Manhattan or wherever. And, you know,
well, let's be clear. If the Rangers make an outstanding offer, Doug Wilson will do it. You know what I mean? If yeah. he feels like he's best for the team. But there are other things in play here. And we saw Mickey Kiprusoff came out today and said, if the Flames trade me, I will not report.
Right.
I will not go. I have a newborn child in Calgary. I am not leaving. So go ahead and trade me, but I won't report. So you've got that out there too. Right, so some of these guys, you know, Tim Thomas, I mean, look, he's basically playing on the best team in the NHL or one of the best teams, and he's out, you know, shooting grizzly bears or whatever the hell he's doing.
Like, he's on Doomsday Preppers, I think.
I think I saw him on like that Alaskan gold mining show. I mean, whatever the hell he's doing.
Did you see Dustin Pedder's tweet today?
No.
Oh my God, it was the best. He's like, well, due to political reasons, I'm not coming to the White House. Lol, just kidding. I'm showing up. I would never miss this. Total shot at Tim Thomas. It's hilarious.
I thought I saw someone else put that Sutter actually scratched Dustin Pedder from the White House today. That was funny too.
Oh man.
So in terms of the long-term effect of this Murray trade, dude, right now I'm talking about this week, the Sharks have a huge week, you know, really four more games, I think, until the trade deadline, which is a week from tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not that the Sharks are going to be active in adding pieces, which I don't think they're going to get a rental, but I think hockey trades are there to be made, and losing Douglas Murray has opened up a void in the toughness department. I mean, really, the Sharks lost a ton of toughness there with Douglas Murray, and with Klo out, you know, they're a little vulnerable in that department. Actually, yeah. I'm surprised that we haven't seen the Matt Pelich call up yet,
yeah.
you know, just having him around. But I think it's possible they could be looking to add a player that plays with an edge.
Yeah.
You know, and not a rental, you know, someone who's going to stick around. Well, so I think we
certainly agree about that. I don't think they're going to, if they are going to add any pieces, it's not going to be a guy who's going to be a restricted free agent in the offseason or unrestricted free agent.
They're not looking to do something like that. I'm sorry, but I didn't let you answer. What do you think the effect is going to be this week? Are they going to carry this through, dude? So it sure looked promising last night, or are they just going to revert back to what was happening, you know, the previous 8 weeks where they were playing pretty awful hockey?
Well, looking at the sample size, the brutal truth is that they've been playing pretty poorly for the last 25 games, and they had one good game. Does that necessarily mean they're going to turn the whole thing around? It's possible, but I'd rather go with a 25 game sample than a one game sample. And I mean, Douglas Murray, for all of his flaws, did have certain attributes that were, you know, beneficial to the team, shot blocking, penalty kill, and things like that. I know certain people were really down on him, but clearly he was in the lineup for some sort of reason. I was talking to a guy actually at work about Douglas Murray, and I said, Douglas Murray has to be one of the smartest hockey players in the NHL. Because if you take a guy out of the crowd and you give him Murray's size, and maybe more importantly, Murray's speed and just raw skill set, his ability or lack thereof to handle the puck, his ability or lack thereof to skate, and you just put him on the ice, that guy will be out of the NHL in 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas Murray never is out of position. Douglas Murray, yeah, he gets beat by guys who are super fast, because it's inevitable when you have that kind of speed disparity between yourself and other players. The fact that he was able to hold on to an NHL job And how many games does he scratch this year? One game, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two games? I mean, it's a testament to how smart of a player he really is. And clearly, other teams see that. Because you get a guy who's just ass slow like that, that guy's just going to get torched right and left. And yeah, he wasn't getting torched.
Ray Shiro's not an idiot. No. I mean, obviously, he paid a premium price to get Douglas Murray a...
Well, you know, let's talk about that. Because okay, that's the research I did here before the podcast. Because he gave up 2 second-round picks, right? And when... Let's say best case.
Okay.
2 second-round picks.
Right.
So what did I say to you when I heard second round?
Yeah, you said, oh, I'm really looking forward to pick number 60 or yeah, something like that.
Right.
Okay, dude. All right. I expect that you have some second round picks.
I do.
All right.
I looked back from 1998 to 2008, and I looked at all the picks in the last 5 picks of the second round. Right. That's probably about where the Penguins are going to be this year. If they don't make it to the conference finals, it's going to be kind of shocking.
Okay.
So last 5 picks, probably make the cup finals. I'll give them the last 2 picks. So I'm going to give you the top 10 players picked in the last 5 picks of the second round over the last 10 years. You ready for this?
Yes. Dramatic music?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, you ready? Number 10.
Number 10?
Nick Spaulding from Nashville.
Okay.
48 points. Yeah. Okay. This. You see where I'm going?
Yeah, that's number 10.
Number 10. Number 9. Johnny Boychuk.
Not a terrible player.
231 career games, 51 points. Okay. Number 11, by the way, Mike Zikomanis. I really wanted Mike Zikomanis to get in there. Number 8, Peter Budaj.
That's not good.
265 career games, right? 902 save percentage, not great. Okay. Number 7, Jamie McBain. Okay.
Unknown.
06 draft pick. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a young gun here. He's 06, right? We shouldn't... 73 points in 189
he's
career.
He's probably
games.
Only 24. He's an old man.
Well, in the NHL,
he's,
that's
he's
true.
In a hot air balloon, like, up.
Yeah. Number 6, Jimmy Howard.
Okay.
Okay? Okay. So now we're getting a little better okay. here. 219 career games, 917 same percentage. Okay. Jimmy Howard. Okay. Number 5, Alex Goligoski.
Okay.
So we're getting a little bit better here. 302 career games, 152 points as a defenseman. Good numbers. Number 4, Wayne Simmons.
All right.
Wayne Simmons, yeah, mm-hmm. It's looking a little bit better. 162 points in 350 career games. Okay. Number 3. Actually, the answer to last week's trivia question, who was the guy from Washington, the second liner that we were trying to think of?
Thomas Fleischmann.
Thomas Fleischmann, number 3. 420 career games, 240 points. Not bad. Okay.
I wouldn't put him in front of Gogo.
Okay. Okay. Well, anyway, the actual rankings.
Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm ruining the bit. Go ahead.
Number 2.
Yeah.
Paul Martin.
Okay.
Number 2, Paul Martin. 581 career games, 234 points. Okay. Number 1.
Number 1.
David Krejci. David Krejci, 301 career points in 407 games. David Krejci, very good player.
Dude, so we just traded Douglas Murray for David Krejci? Is that what you're saying?
No.
David Krejci and Alex Goligoski?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yes! Yes! What a steal!
Keep in mind, I looked at, like, this is... I'm looking at 70 players, right? And these are the best players. And number 10 is Nick Spaulding. And number 11 is Mike Zikomanis.
All right.
And number 12 is Roman Lyshenko.
So I guess what you're saying is this is a crapshoot.
Yeah. I'm saying if you get at that point in the draft, there is a history. It is not out of the question that you could get a very good NHL player. But I am saying it might be more of a long shot than we would care to admit, okay? If you get lucky, you get Paul Martin. You get Thomas Fleischmann. If you get unlucky, you get Roman Lyshenko, who still had 139 career games, but do we remember Roman Lyshenko? And not to mention the probably 3 or 4 dozen players who were drafted in that span of picks that never made the NHL. So,
well, we do know Doug Wilson's high on next year's draft, as in all the GMs are.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got an extra bullet in the chamber here.
Yep.
And it's nothing to say that he's going to use that pick. I mean, he may use that pick as trade ammunition not necessarily at the deadline, but in the off season,
or even at the draft to move up.
Right. So collecting assets is always valuable. And for a guy who you didn't need anymore and weren't going to re-sign, I'll take the long shot, because we were just going to let him walk anyways.
Very, very likely. All right, dude. We got tons of emails.
Awesome.
Okay. First, I want to start with the Sharks fan in Northern England, because I was actually watching a replay of Spurs today against Inter. Dudes, hope you're not feeling too close to jumping off a high building yet. I feel like you're opposite, following the Sharks from way over here in the UK. And he comes from North London and is in a long line of Spurs fans.
Awesome.
Although he doesn't say he's a Spurs fan. If he follows Arsenal.
No, dude.
I hope not. Okay. Why doesn't Doug Wilson make a coaching change? The Sharks seem to be playing a defensive game they were never designed for, plus playing one of their D-men as a makeshift forward. The players on the roster don't get this bag overnight. Neither do the coaches.
I like that. That's very Austin Powers, baby. They don't get this bag overnight, baby.
Hey, he's from the UK.
I know. I like it.
Sometimes you just have to call time on a relationship and move on. Looking back at all the coaching changes in the NHL, the vast majority look to have delivered great results. LA, Habs, and Leafs, he's looking at. Mm-hmm. Ottawa hasn't changed this year, but look what great coaching can do with Spezza, Carlson, and McCulloch all out. They keep playing a system with drive and commitment, are a great team to watch. The Habs haven't added any major pieces, but are tops in the East.
Michael Ryder is offended.
There's still time to make the playoffs if the changes are made now. We are at the halfway mark and have balanced a great start with an awful second quarter. If the Sharks can go on a streak, they can make the playoffs, then anything can happen. Surely time to call time on the coach, but who to replace him with? Love the show. Okay, Sharks fan in Northern England. Go Spurs. I think the Sharks should go trade for Gareth Bale.
Oh.
Wow. No.
I'm an Asuakato guy myself.
Benoit Asuakato. I'm a Jean Verhoeghen. Okay, anyway. Right, this is turning into a Spurs podcast. Okay, how awesome. Right, okay. Coaching change, dude.
Well, it was pretty clear yesterday at the Douglas Murray trade press conference when Doug Wilson all out basically said that this is not a coaching issue. This is a player problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that just sort of sums up his take on the situation right there in a nice little package. He does not seem to hold McClellan accountable for this. You know, he said that there are things that you can point to that show not everything is bad. The penalty kill is improved. The goals against is one of the best in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of scoring, he doesn't put that on the coaching staff. He puts that on the ineptness of the players. Right. So that's his take on it. And hearing him say it, I understood. I mean, it's hard to argue with it, but I also see your point of view here, David. And we've talked about it on the podcast that, yeah, maybe the only way to jumpstart this group was to bring in someone to kick their ass.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too late now, dude, in terms of this season. Too late. Too late to make a coaching change. They're not gonna.
I mean, the Devils were involved with a very late coaching change, and they went on and won the cup with Larry Robinson, right?
It's not gonna happen.
I don't think it's gonna happen either, but I just want to entertain the possibility. You know, we saw a coaching change in Tampa a few days ago, and there was a big name guy out on the market that we thought would get signed, and Steve Yzerman decided to go with a smaller name, a name I had never heard of. Couldn't even pull it out right now.
It's their AHL.
Yeah, their AHL guy. But the big name guy is still available. I mean, just clearly it's not going to happen. But what do you think would happen if the Sharks fired T-Mac and went and hired Lindy Ruff? What would happen?
Honestly, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think nothing, because I think it's the same. What is Lindy Ruff going to come in here and do? Yell at Patrick Marleau, and then he's going to pout and ask Joe Thornton to play an even more defensive style. I mean, he's already seeing his, you know, statistics shrivel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how bad does he want to play for Chicago right now and have, you know, a million points? You know, I mean, and free wheel and deal. You know, I mean, Jumbo has kind of sacrificed that a little bit. It's not really paying dividends for the Sharks, but you know, he's seen his stats dip, you know, because I think at times he's trying to play the system.
Yeah.
But last night we saw how it can work both ways. I mean, you know, they seemed to buy into it last night, and they had some very dangerous moments in the duck zone, you know?
Yeah. And one of the most successful lines was the third line. And these are sort of two of my, you know, favorite players on the Sharks, or players that I want to see do so well, which are James Shepherd and TJ Gagliardi. I want to see those guys do well. And I thought that line worked well.
Yeah, it did. Well, you had a good player playing with them.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to put him with Scott Gomez or Michael Hanzus. That's not going to work. I mean, Scott Gomez is one dimensional and Hanzu sucks. He sucks. Yeah. He shouldn't play again. I mean, he should be done, and they're not playing him now, and they shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point? You know, you sucked with him in the lineup. So take him out and let one of the kids play and see what you got. Cause you got to make decisions on Shepherd and Gagliardi in the offseason. You got to make decisions. Are you going to keep them, or are they going to be gone? So got to see them play. You already know Hanzus is going to be gone.
Right.
No one's going to take him.
No one.
P.S.
And he's got like a no movement, which is preposterous.
He's going to rot in the press box. I can't imagine anybody taking him or giving you anything for him. Like, I just don't know why anyone would do that. If Doug Wilson could trade Michael Hanzus, even for like a seventh, then he's a freaking
genius.
He's Hogwarts brilliant.
I know.
All right.
Yeah.
He is.
That's wizardry is what that
he
is.
He is amazing.
Dude, I think we just completely preempted Marcus's entire email.
Damn it.
He was talking about a different... I think the coaching staff's inability to ice our best lineup this year has really doomed us. I'm specifically referring to the insistence on playing Douglas Murray and Michael Hanzus. When younger, faster, and better players like Bron Demers, Galliard, Shepherd, Desjard, and Wingles are spending time in the press box. My questions are, how does this coaching staff fail to realize that players like Hanzus and Murray simply don't have it anymore? And what do you view as the Sharks' best lineup? His lineup actually has Burns on D with Shepherd, Desjardins, and Burrish, Klobuchar, and Havlat as the second line. So, Marcus, I think we sort of answered that. I mean, it looks like Tim Kennedy has now fallen out of favor as well. So it looks like Hanzus is out. I would certainly rather take my chances with Tim Kennedy than Michael Hanzus at this point. And Murray's no longer on the team. So at least we're going to get half of what you're talking about. And is there anything that we saw last night that indicates that we need Michael Hanzus? I don't think so. It looks like he's going to be the next one out. So maybe, Marcus, you might get exactly what you want sort of without meaning to. But it seemed like the coaching staff was sort of moving in the direction of marginalizing Michael Hanzus.
Yeah, well, they pushed the right buttons for one game. You know, we'll see. I mean, this week is huge for this season.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's huge. I mean, they're either going to revert right back to their old habits, you know, tomorrow night against the Ducks. And if that happens and Anaheim comes into San Jose, the fans tomorrow night, I think they're going to be optimistic.
Yeah.
I think come into the tank. People are going to want to believe that this team has woken up. You poked the big kitty with the stick. And now, you know, how will they respond? Will they come out and thump the Ducks again? Or are they going to get a beat down? Because the Ducks are going to be pissed. They're going to be kind of ornery. You know,
they've
lost three in a row, and I think they're feeling a little sensitive. So, big week. You know, we'll be there on Saturday. I think you're going to be there. You'll be there for all of them, right, dude?
Yeah, I'm going to be. I'm planning on being there for all of them.
Nice,
so.
Dude. Yeah. Nice. I gotta say that, you know, while the Gagliardi and Shepherd in between Pavelski has looked pretty good. Maybe I'm in the minority on this, dude, but I'd like to see a little more Adam Burrish. I just feel like he is now, that signing is looking so bad because he's making so much money to basically be Brad Winchester and play in the first two periods and completely disappear in the third. And I don't know, maybe he's just not a good hockey player, but I mean, why is he here then? Like, why is he here?
Yeah.
Do you think he's in danger of being the amnesty in the offseason? I mean, that's a bad contract if you're going to play him 7 minutes.
That's true. Is it enough money to warrant an amnesty?
Well, I mean,
I guess he's over the limit for you have to pay it even if you send him down. So I guess that's not so good.
I'm 100% you amnesty Havlat. I don't even care, if he, has 20 points the rest of the way, you amnesty Havlat. Like he's here for 5 games, gone for 15. Like, you're just sort of waiting for him to Keystone Cops it over the boards again, and then he's going to be out for the rest of the year. You know it's going to happen. I'm enjoying watching him play with Joe right now, but I have no confidence in Martin Havlat's going to be out there for a full game tomorrow night. Like, he could come up lame at any moment. He's like, what's that movie, Unbreakable, Samuel L. Jackson? Yeah, you touch
Mr.
him
Glass.
And he falls to pieces. That's Martin Havlat for you. We got another email.
Yeah, we got another email. Sorry, I'm just looking at the time.
Why? Who cares, dude?
I guess you're right.
We're having a good time.
Yeah.
Why do you care? Why are you putting limits on our relationship?
Sorry, dude. Oh, cool. We got an email from Aaron. I think this one certainly warrants this sound effect that we haven't seen in quite a while.
I'm going off the rails on a crazy trade.
All right, Aaron, he's talking to some hockey people on Twitter, and he's putting together a crazy trade. Here it is. New York Rangers get Dan Boyle. Edmonton Oilers get Michael Delzato, Stalock, Heemskerk-Kotkaniemi, and a New York Rangers second. San Jose Sharks get Carl Hagelin, Magnus Pajarvi, and an Edmonton first. Giving up Boyle sucks, and there's no way it makes the team immediately better. However, they would probably be heading into the draft with at least one lottery pick and the possibility of two chances at Seth Jones or Jonathan Drouin or others, along with two speedy young forwards they can control for at least a couple of years. They'd have a little cap room to add someone along the blue line at a reasonable price and would have a forward group that suddenly doesn't look so bad. He's putting Pajarvi and Hurdle in the lineup next year, and he's talking about Sean Curley. Okay, that's a lot of information. That's a lot of ideas. Dude, crazy trade. Dan Boyle plus Stalock, I'd say at least, and the Sharks would get Hagelin, Pajarvi, and a first. What do you think of this trade? A, even close to being something that any team would agree to, and B, would you take it?
This is insane.
Yeah,
I love it.
I know, it's awesome.
I love it. This is Jack Nicholson, get the electric shock therapy insane.
Yeah.
And I've proposed many of these, and that's why I love it, Aaron. I love it. The Rangers, you're asking the Rangers to give up Delzato, Hagelin, and a second for Dan Boyle. That's quite a price.
Yeah.
That there's no way they would pay that much. I mean, that's so much.
I think Delzato in a first would probably be stretching it.
That's a lot too.
Even Delzato straight up might be tough.
That's tough. Honestly, I would rather have Delzato straight up for Boyle than your package of Hagelin and Pajarvi, although I'm just seeing the Edmonton first. Ooh, that makes it a little tastier. I'm rereading it. Darn it. Well, anyways, I don't think there's any way this would ever happen. But I like your thought of trying to rejuvenate the Sharks' forward core. Because mm-hmm. it needs a facelift. It needs a facelift.
It certainly does.
What do you think?
I'm with you. I there's no way that they would ever give up Hagelin and Delzato, but I'm going to have to defer to what I said last week. I can't speak logically about trading Dan Boyle. I just can't. I want him on this team, even if deals like this don't happen, because I'm not so sure deals like this can happen. And Dan Boyle is a great asset to this team. I think of what he can do for Matt Irwin. I think of what he can do for Jason Demers and Justin Braun. He can help them, blossom into a better offensive player. And, you can learn a lot from a guy who is pretty damn awesome. And I just, I don't like the idea of...
Getting emotional, dude?
Yeah, I'm getting a little weird. No, I'm not. But... I do like Dan Boyle as a player an awful lot, and I don't think it's easy to replace a person like that. And I worry about, you know, what you can get in return. You know, all these guys are all going to be question marks, and I guess you got to deal with it. But still, it's just something I don't know if I could personally pull the trigger on.
That's why if you were going to do it, you'd have to get back a Delzato. You'd have to replace him.
Yes.
You couldn't roll into the rest of the season and like tell, you know, hey, Derek Jocelyn, I know you were just loaned to Worcester. Guess what? You're back in the NHL,
right,
and you're the worst NHL defenseman in the league again. Congrats.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to happen. So,
And if Burns, you know, the Burns experiment makes this even more interesting, yeah, because if there's any idea that Burns, that this is more than just a passing fancy, where Burns could be, you know, in front for a considerable amount of time, then all of a sudden, without Boyle and Burns, you have a huge hole,
right,
at your power play quarterback. Right. I guess you put Burns on the court in the quarterback position, like Patrick Marleau has done and other forwards have done, you know, in the league, but still, you still need a puck mover on the blue line, yeah, 5-on-5. And if you don't have Burns and you don't have Boyle, asking Matt Irwin or asking Justin Braun to do that is asking too much.
Yeah, that's why I still hate this Burns up front thing. I don't like it. Like, I know they have had some success, but you know, people have talked about this being like a Dustin Byfuglien hybrid type situation. He doesn't play like Dustin Byfuglien at all. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien, if you remember from that playoff series, I mean, he would stand in front of the net and it was impossible to move him.
Yeah.
You know, and then they would use him in a hybrid way like that. I mean, Burns is, I know one game he had like 5 hits. I mean, like, I don't really see any physicality from him. I see him playing on the boards a lot.
You see him sort of playing like Jumbo.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And I see him, you know, he does find open space on the ice and he does seem to click with Jumbo.
And he's got a really,
for sure, he knows how to, he can score.
Shoot. He can score. Man.
But, you know, we gave up a lot to get this guy. And we paid him a lot of money. And I don't know, like, if Brent Burns, the forward, was out there, I don't think we would have paid him all this money. And I wouldn't have traded what we traded to get this player as a forward.
Right.
I wouldn't have wanted that. Like, that's not what we needed. So you're sort of robbing Peter to pay Burns here, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it. So I don't know, dude. I hope Boyle's still here. I love Dan Boyle. I don't want him to go.
Yeah.
I think how the Sharks play in the next 3 games is going to have a lot to do with that.
I think you're right. Okay, let's go to Madeline, who is our scout in the Northeast. So Jack Parker is retiring from BU after 40 years of being the head coach and had his last game behind the bench on Saturday. There are rumors around BU that Matt Nieto, a Sharks prospect, will be leaving for the Sharks after this year. I don't know how much he wants to leave, but if the Sharks want him, I think he would. Interesting.
Huh.
You know, you think of, you know, it's all these other situations that can influence a player. We see a guy like, who is the guy that went to the Portland Winterhawks? Who is the guy, the defenseman that in the Sharks system?
Oh, William Wren.
William Wren, who wasn't getting enough playing time at University of Denver, which is a hockey powerhouse, and he wasn't happy with his minutes, and so he left, you know. So it's not just...
It hasn't exactly worked out for William Wren.
No.
I mean, he went to Portland for 2 years, and then he can't even stay not good enough to play in Worcester. He's playing the ECHL.
Yeah.
So that's not good.
No.
I mean, this guy is not a really...
He's done.
He's not going to be an NHL player. You know, that's pretty much done.
All right. Okay, here's our last email from Eric. Dudes, I'm emailing today while basking in the glow of a regulation win against a quality team. I don't know if I'll have another such opportunity, so I figured I'll take advantage of it. A couple of points. First, I'm glad Murray fetched more than we gave up for Vallin. And he's asking for hamburgers. Let's see if I have it.
Hamburgers.
Yeah!
It's been a while since I pulled that one out. Second, it's sad that the Sharks had to trade one of the players who competed on every shift, not something the Sharks are flush with right now.
That's true.
Absolutely true. Point taken. Third, I'm starting to wonder whether Joe has a wrist or a hand injury. Clearly, he's not competing at the level he was the last 2 years, but he doesn't seem to have the hands that we've all learned to appreciate. By this, I do not mean vision. He's still piling up a little cyst because he has Joe vision. But have you noticed that he's just coughing up the puck more? Whether you're stick handling or receiving a pass, he doesn't seem sharp. Reminds me of the playoffs 2 years ago after the Robidoux slash. What do the dudes think? Dude, is Joe injury, slowing down, other? What's happening?
Gosh, it's impossible to know if he's hurt. I mean, he's certainly played through injuries before, and we really had no clue because of anything that he said. Because that's possible, Eric, but he didn't look hurt to me last night.
No.
You know, playing with Havlat. I think that, you know, Joe and the whole team seem to relate more to your second point that, you know, they don't seem to always show up every night.
Right.
And last night he showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so did everybody else. So I think it more has to do with that than him being hurt. That's just my take on it, dude.
Actually, one thing that rings a bell for me is how Randy and Drew were talking actually about Ryan Getzlaff last night and how Ryan Getzlaff had 11 goals last year. And this year he's already got 12 or 13. And how basically the coaching staff told him, you have to shoot more. And I was thinking specifically, that made me think of specifically a 2-on-1 with Joe. Everybody on the ice played the pass and Joe tried to pass and it didn't happen. And to me, it makes me wonder if like everybody's sort of figured this guy out now. It's like there's almost no danger he's going to shoot anymore. And we've talked about this, you know, ad nauseum over the years, and it's something that is no end of frustration. And Joe sort of shrugs it off the way he shrugs off some other stuff. That's what it is. I'm a passer. But I can't help thinking his game would improve if he would actually start being more of a threat in other ways, because I mean, Joe could have passed if there was any shot threat at all, but there wasn't. So the defenseman just didn't, you know, a lot of times you see a defenseman on a 2-on-1, they'll take the passing lane away, and then as the player gets closer to the net, they'll cheat more towards the guy with the puck in order to take away his shooting options. And on this 2-on-1, the defenseman didn't even do that because he knew Joe was just going to pass.
Right.
He knew he wasn't going to shoot. So that passing option was completely shot to hell, and Joe tried to squeak it through anyway, and it didn't work. You know, it's like, wah-wah, not shocking. So that's one of the things I see about Joe. I think he's just he's almost too predictable of a player right now. He's still got elite vision, as you said, and he's still got great hands, but even the very best players, it's like Ovechkin, right? Ovechkin still has the same skills, but everybody knows what he's going to do, and I think that he's sort of faded a little bit because of that. And I've read some articles about how these elite players, they find new ways to be scoring threats. They find new ways to be great. You know, they do something different and then they come back to what they used to do. And it seems like Joe kind of does the same thing most of the time.
Can't players change, dude? Can't we ask him to shoot? Look at Matt Cook. He changed. Dude.
He did. Rafi Torres.
Look at Rafi Torres. Yeah. He has redeemed himself. Look at Patrick Coletta has not redeemed himself. I'm so sorry.
Patrick Coletta.
No, they've asked him to do this a million times, dude. He's not going to do it. He doesn't.
I know.
Think that he needs to
his
do
own.
It.
It's to his own detriment,
right? And that's, you know, opening up this can of worms again.
Yeah,
that's the captain of the team. I'm not gonna change.
I'm not gonna change, even though it's probably better for myself and the team.
Yep. Nope. Just gonna do what I feel like, which is I love to pass. So last night he seemed much more aggressive, and that's in part why the Sharks won that game.
Mm-hmm.
So. Hopefully it'll continue. I hope.
All right. Last thing, Eric Scott. I'm still of the opinion that we need to trade any and all of the veterans that can be disposed of to get younger. If Boyle could bring back Kreider in a first, or Couturier in a first, or Ryan Spooner, who is a Boston prospect, in a first, would it change your tune? Kreider in a first, we've talked about before. Couturier.
That's different. Now, Couturier,
I like the idea of
is an
Sean
NHL
Couturier.
Player. I mean, like,
yeah.
He's an NHL player. He looked really good last year. He's kind of buried on their fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Couturier in a first.
I would have a very difficult time turning down Couturier in a first.
That's,
especially since the Flyers probably aren't going
to
make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's something to think about. You know, you've got a player that you can control for a couple more years. Reasonable salary. Definitely good enough to play 18 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that'd be tough. You know, Ryan Spooner, you know, I know who you're talking about. You know, he's a kid that is a really good playmaker, a little undersized, and had kind of a knock in juniors of being a bit of a hot shot. I don't know if I'm really interested in Ryan Spooner. I don't know if he fits into what's going on around here right now. And he has no real NHL track record other than maybe a couple of games, like a handful of games. So that's not good enough. Kreider, I don't want someone in the doghouse for Boyle. Like, yeah. I want someone who's going to come in here and make an impact now. You know, not in 3 years, you know, but now, you know, getting anything but an NHL, young NHL player would be a mistake for Boyle, dude.
It's frankly unacceptable because, you know, these guys don't grow in trees and you have to get something that you can add to the core in order to build the team and, you know, rebuild, refresh, whatever buzzwords you want to attach to this. I mean, it may not be a complete reboot, a teardown, and see how many top five picks you can get in the next 3 years. But, you know, the fact is you need good young players right now. And Sean Couturier, I would gladly have on my team.
So we don't know what's going to happen to the Sharks in the next week. You know, they could go 2-2. They could go 4-0. They could easily go 0-4.
Yeah.
But regardless, where do you see the Sharks in a week, dude, with Ryan Clough? You know, right now he's not playing because he's hurt, so his trade value is zero. But if he does come back tomorrow night, which supposedly it's possible that he plays against the Ducks, and he puts together three healthy games this week, what do you think is going to happen with Clough if he is healthy enough to play in these next couple games come next Wednesday?
Well, if he scores, then the very fabric of space and time will rip apart. No, I mean, if he comes back, I guess the reason you bring him back is you want to show him to other teams that would be interested in Ryan Clough and show him that he's healthy and that he can fetch a price. I think that's kind of what you got to do with Ryan Clough at this point, right? I mean, isn't he a trade chip?
Yeah, I think even if the Sharks go 4-0 and close part of the lineup, you trade him. Yeah. You trade him because this guy's not, you're not going to re-sign this guy, I don't think.
That's the question, right? If you aren't going to re-sign him, then you should probably trade him. And unless the Sharks are dusting off a contract extension right now, which I really hope they're not, that it's time to get some value for him.
There's a difference between crazy and productive and just crazy, which it appears he's just crazy right now. Like he's done two of the weirdest things I've seen in a Sharks uniform, other than the Scott Parker climbing the glass, which is still my favorite thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's good.
But playing the puck from the bench was so stupid. That was, what's dumber, playing the puck from the bench or Hartnell throwing his glove to try and stop a breakaway?
I think the glove is dumber because everyone was looking at that.
Everybody saw Clough play that puck from the bench.
I know.
It's like coming off the sidelines and tackling somebody.
It is. It was the hockey equivalent of that.
Stupid. And then, you know, coming off the bench and going right for a fight is not as dumb, but it still got him suspended. Mm-hmm. And for someone, you know, if Hartnell, I think it was a little forgivable because this guy is an extremely productive player.
Yeah.
You know, and Clough, if Clough did this 2 years ago when he was scoring 60 points, then we just go, ha, ha, Ryan Clough, he's a little, goes off the rails sometimes, but he's a 60-point player and it's worth whatever he might do. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's a 7-point player or whatever.
Yeah, and then you're like, he's Link Gates crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not sure what he's going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty unpredictable. I mean, someone who's going to clearly break the rules of a game he's been playing his whole life. It's not like he forgot that he couldn't touch the puck from the bench.
I know. Like, it's not like, oops, my bad, I forgot. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, not productive anymore. I'm wearing a Ryan Clough t-shirt right now.
I know.
Okay? I like the guy. Like I liked the guy of 2 years ago, but I have this t-shirt. I don't know. I don't see them committing 4 years, $15 million to this guy. Do you?
No, I just don't think that it's not.
In the best interest of this team moving forward to get slower and crazier?
Crazier might be fun to watch, but I don't think slower is certainly a good idea.
I might get burned in my bed tonight for saying I'd rather see Steve Ott than.
Yeah.
Steve Ott at least is, he still can play.
Yeah.
And he's crazy.
Yeah, he's plenty crazy.
He's crazy.
Maybe we could trade for Steve Ott and Patrick Aletta.
He's more effective. Okay, I mean, I don't know.
Well, dude, now that we've completely decimated the team, I think we should probably sign off.
Oh, we haven't decimated the team, dude. I feel good. I told you last night before the game, I said, we're going to win tonight. Yeah. I just had a feeling we're going to win. They're going to respond. And you said, no.
I did.
Not going to win.
Yeah.
We bet a beer on it. I'm going to drink your delicious beer.
I know you are.
I'm going to take it. And I'm feeling upbeat.
I drink your beer.
I drink it up. I drink your beer. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy.
Okay.
I'm going to take a leap of faith, dude.
Yeah.
I'm going to say in the next three games, the Sharks get 5 points.
Wow.
I think they get 5 points. And I think they're going to stay alive. I think that maybe they've sort of drank the fountain of youth right now. And this team is super streaky. And they can carry it forward. I'm going to be positive. I think that they're going to find a way to make a positive out of this Murray thing and see it through at least for another week, at least through the trade deadline. And then it wouldn't shock me when the trade deadline comes through and none of them are gone if they all go in the toilet.
Yeah.
And I'm being half serious about that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Oh man. I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly, except I don't know if they're even going to last that long. I mean, they have a nice template to work from. Obviously, the Ducks game is sort of a template. If we play this way, we can beat some of the best teams in the West. But I could also see it the other way, that if they don't play that way, then all of a sudden they have this, they're on another slide. So I'm not quite as optimistic as you. Of course, I want them to play well and to win all these games. But, you know, I think Detroit is a little bit better than they have been. I think the Detroit game is going to be really tough. I think Phoenix is winnable, but I can't see them beating the Ducks tomorrow. That's the one game I can't see.
I mean, the Ducks have lost three in a row.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're kind of reeling right now, and they're not really sure why. So they're going to come out. The Ducks are going to put up a fight tomorrow night for sure. So it's the benchmark of the season tomorrow night. If the Sharks lose 5-1, then it's going to be a pity party again.
Yeah.
If they can even get a point tomorrow night, I think that's a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can carry it into Detroit, who I still, you know, Detroit, I mean, come on, they're playing Matt Lashoff and, you know, Kyle Quincy and stuff like this. They're not that good.
Yeah.
They're not that good. Yay, Justin Abdelkader got a hat trick. Yay, I think Rob Goudreau got one once too.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
First one in Sharks
history. Dude, I can tell. You want to end this.
Dude, I think we're done. Actually,
how long has this been?
Long enough.
How long?
We're over 52.
Yes, let's keep talking.
Maybe Ryan Clough will come out tomorrow night and kill a guy with a trident.
I think I ate your chocolate squirrel.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.